Ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, and well, even if you feel like you identify as a can of orange soda, we're here for all of you tonight. Matt is on an important phone call right now. He is on a secure line. We don't know. It could be a head of state. It might just be, you know, about getting head. I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but we do have Ray here right now. Matt will join us here shortly. And tonight only, again, I said this the last time I had to do the cold open here. We're here to help everybody as much as we can, because springtime's tough, Ray. Everybody is jonesing to get out there. It's almost full-on Bermuda season here for most of our people in the South. It's ramping up to be full-on surge growth here in cool season country. All kinds of problems. People freaking out. I've seen some of the dumbest shit being posted here recently.
Really?
On the Facebook.
Okay. Really,
yeah, it's
Ryan?
Yeah,
it's peak idiocy.
Let me share with you one, because this is a little bit. It's going to have people's names in it. I'm sorry. I'm not going to try and redact this unless J Pink wants to go.
Hey,
off.
Who cares?
No, I mean, fuck it.
Do stupid things, become famous, Ryan. That's the rule.
It's just got to get a grip. These people got to get a grip. I'm trying to strike back here in my text messages to get this. Anyway, so if you do have questions, go ahead and post those in the chat. We haven't done a call in a while. I don't think we're going to do that tonight. We talked about doing one here soon, and I think we'll get there. But want to take just your questions in the chat tonight. Here to help, whether you're a lawn care professional, you're trying to finish up your round ones, maybe some of you started your round twos, who knows where you're at there. And if you're a homeowner, you got a new lawn, an old lawn, somewhere in between, or you have no lawn and you just have an old lady and you want to call in, or not call in, but, you know, write out a paragraph, four sentences, you know, main idea, three supporting points, you know, that whole thing. You can do that too. We'll read it live here on air. And if you'd ask for a specific tone, I can read it poignantly. I can read it angrily, or I can just read it monotone like this. Yes, baby, I do love you. I never said that your sister's ass looked good ever before. Even if it did look good. All right, I digress. J Pink, let me see here. Uh-oh. I see Telly Coleman has said, seeding midnight Kentucky bluegrass during the eclipse will turn it into Bermuda. I don't know that to be true. I guess it just depends on how long your midnight is, sir. You know? So, all right. A couple of things here. Let me pull this. I've got this right now. Not this one. This one. Here we go. Oh, this poor guy. Yeah, he's about to come famous, and he's probably not going to like me, but.
Hey. Do stupid things, win stupid prizes, Ryan. I mean, that's the rule.
There's that. I think hang on, wait, let me send you this other one real quick, J Pink, because it's the lead in for this. Okay. Is it this one? Oh man. Was this the same post? I got to see if it's the same post. Anyway, we're drawing dead air here for a second. So there was a question. J Pink, can you read that while I'm typing here?
Yeah. So sorry, I was also tap dancing a little bit so I could do this thing. The question is, I think I have a fair amount of snow mold. Don't have a closer photo than this, but what would be the best way to handle this? I was tap dancing so I can pull this up.
Oh, nice. I'm not convinced that's snow mold.
Is it just neither, a little dormant?
Neither am I.
Yeah.
It still
just looks like
it's still coming out of dormancy, yeah, Ryan? I mean, that's. And you know why I don't think it's snow mold? Typically, you know, when you see snow mold, the grass is like super like matted down and almost slimy looking. In the spots that have the snow mold. This is not it. I don't think.
Oh, man. Yeah, that I think is just dormant grass is waking up. I'd love to know where. Wait, did they give a location?
Oh, whoops! I was on mute. Sorry, it's in Minnesota.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, so I looked at some soil temperatures up there for a project that we've got going on in the Twin Cities. There, I think they're still mid upper 40 soil temps. Like this just hasn't waked him up. So, just give it another couple of weeks here. Let me check the forecast in the Twin Cities here, and just for a good frame of reference here of what's going down. Oh gosh, listen to this. I just searched St. Paul here. Grant, a little bit of a heat wave here, but this weekend, Sunday or Saturday, 76, Sunday, 77, Monday, 79. All right. And it goes back down to more seasonal temperatures.
What was it in the previous 14 days, Ryan? What was it in the previous 14 to 21 days?
Let me go back and see.
Was it nice and cool? Was it nice and cool?
last week, pretty chilly. You know, they had some nights in the upper 20s. Yeah. So this is not there yet. Just not there yet. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Last week of March in the 30s, they had two nights of 16 degrees for lows. Mm-hmm. Last week of March. Yeah. So this is just give it time. What's the old saying, Ray? Nothing quickly happens in agriculture except for crop failure.
Yes. Nothing good. Too. Yeah. Nothing good happens in agronomy except crop failure or turf failure. I mean, so patience, my dear.
yeah, it'll get there. And I know it's agonizing to sit there and look at this, and it seems like anymore in the Midwest, all we get is, winter that turns to summer, and there really is no in between. Just like Ray has summer that turns into a wet winter, and there's really no in between for him, too. So moving to the continental United States when he does it, folks, will be not too dissimilar. I think it'll just have a little bit more snow from time to time. That's all. So, all right.
Actually, I would be looking forward to the frost and the idea of grass going dormant several months out of the year.
Oh, boy.
I would look forward to that.
Yeah, that's a lot. All right, J-Pink, whenever you're ready, you can do the black background one first, and then we'll do the white background. I just wanted to highlight this of just, yeah, maybe there's a joke in there. I don't know. Okay, so the question is, this is Ohio's lawn care nut, and for those of you that don't know, I live in the great state of Ohio, born and raised, never left. Sad as that might be for some, but I enjoy it. So, but unfortunately, there is some bad advice that gets passed in this group, and also some good advice from time to time too. I gotta play both sides here. So Robert Thomas asks, how much nitrogen are y'all putting down annually? With a pondering face emoji there. And Joseph Christoph says about 4 pounds a year per thousand. Sometimes if I need more for my Kentucky bluegrass to grow in. That's a fair answer. I'll 4 pounds might be a little bit heavy. It depends on if it's an established lawn or if it's
hot.
If it's a new lawn, okay. If it's an established lawn, let's just say 10 years. I'll give it that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go ahead and tease you here. Let's go from the black to the white. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Gavin Locke says, I don't know, but probably like 7. Ooh.
Wow.
And Russell Chandler comes in and says, yeah, what he said. I was thinking at least 7. Ray, maybe 9. Okay. Ray, let me just ask this, because there are situations and climates where, you know, you have Bermuda grass growing 12 months out of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tropical locations. In the highest possible sense, what do you think the maximum amount of nitrogen to turf grass, like grass specifically growing for an amenity purpose, would you ever think that would be put down on a lawn turf grass in the world? Just curious.
I typically see commercially, it's no more than 4 to 5 pounds of nitrogen over a 12-month growing season, Ryan. It's not a lot.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
And that's on Bermuda grass that is strictly for ornamental and not functional purposes. I can see that going up to 6 to 8 pounds if this were a football field or something similar where there's a lot of traffic on it. And mm-hmm. for me maintaining Bermuda, guess how much nitrogen I apply?
I'll say in your climate, maybe 3, 3.5 most on Bermuda.
Lower.
Okay, fair.
1/10 of a pound of nitrogen per month.
Oh, so 1.2 pounds. You know, it's interesting. man, I don't want to say this. Is that, first of all, this is wrong. Like, absolutely wrong. Actually, Dr. Mm-hmm. Shaddix, what do you think about this answer of 7 to 9 pounds?
It's absurd.
I wholeheartedly agree, sir. Thank you.
I agree. I agree, Dr. Shaddix.
A couple things that you have to keep in mind here, and if you don't know Dr. Shaddix, please go check him out. He's putting out some wonderful content right now. Turfgrass Epistemology on YouTube. I think, kind of coming into his own form here. And we hope to have him on the show here soon again, potentially this summer. So he's got some new stuff he's teasing out and working on internally, and then we'll hope to have him on here again this summer. But I think what is important here is that, you know, the recommendations for nitrogen that you will typically see out there are mostly old, mostly outdated. Now, there are, you know, Dr. Shaddix will preach and say that you have to look for evidence-based fertilizer recommendations and look on land-grant universities and turfgrass universities that are, you know, nearest to your home and your region and things like that. I agree with that to a point. I also think, too, that some of the newer cultivars that we have are breeding out now don't even conform to that, right? And we're seeing that in some early testing yes. data that's coming out where even what we, you know, knew to apply, say, 10, 15 years ago, the rates that the turf grass is responding to is actually lower. And I think we're going to see some actual published research come out here within the next 1 to 3 years that really starts to tease this out. First on low cut, I think we'll see it on like bent grass, golf course stuff. And then mm-hmm. Moving on into higher cut turf, like turf or tall fescue, kind of bluegrass. I know there's a research project going on at Ohio State right now that I believe is reviewing all the high cut stuff. It's they're in the first ending the first year of a 3-year study. So that'll be really interesting right. data when it comes out. So I guess the bottom line here, Ray, is that less is more. You can always put more down, but if you go into a season planning to put down 4 pounds, you know, on a lawn that is, you know, say older than 10 years, has been established, hasn't been changed up, anything like that, I think you're grossly over applying. The Michigan State research would suggest that. And I think Dr. Shaddix has covered that on his channel too. We've talked about it on here as well. So,
yes,
anything to add there as far as how to plan?
Okay. How to plan is, you know, when people ask about nitrogen in the spring and they're talking about a cool season grass? Mm-hmm. Do you know that in the back of my head, all of the warning sirens go off, Ryan? All the warning sirens go off. And the reason why all the warning sirens go off is because that tells me that we have somebody that, in my mind, has no business dealing with turf grass. Because here we have a guy where here's what he's going to do to your turf. He's going to overfeed it with nitrogen in spring and early summer, have your turf grass decline from being overstimulated and pushed too hard through the summer, mm-hmm. and then you're going to be in a situation where this is the lawn that got maxed out over summer, and now you're looking at a lot of overseeding that you got to do in the fall, whereas if you take a more reasoned approach, it's very light on the nitrogen in the spring, but then after August, you start making applications up until about a month before dormancy. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what you've told me is you fertilize up until dormancy, and that works out better for the grass, you know, versus being crazy with your nitrogen at the wrong time of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, when it comes to, if we're just looking at cool season grass, which is what's being discussed here, I would lean more towards, you know, 50% of your nitrogen going out beyond, you know, from say September 1st up until at the latest, October. The end of October in most yeah. locations. I think that's a fair window, mm-hmm. You know, from the mid-Atlantic north and west. And then the balance of that can be, you know, kind of spread out over the preceding, you know, 4 or 5 months, right? So, yeah, I it doesn't need to be that difficult, and it certainly doesn't need to be that much. So everybody's now famous. Thanks, Ohio Lawn Care Nuts. And hopefully don't get kicked out of the group. I try to do that. Oh, by the way, LW50 is saying that this is Nick, Greek Geek of fame here, a past guest on the show. That's his Ohio cousin that must have wrote that comment. So that very well could be true. Okay, a wood chopper. Let's see here. How much time between split apps of prodiamine 65 WDG? Just did the first one 2 days ago and went with the KBG rate. If you're, what is the KBG rate? Is that a half pound? I don't know.
Half to three quarter, right? Half to three quarter pound. Okay. And if that's the case, I recommend give yourself 30 days from the time that you applied and then do the second app. And that should be no crabgrass and no goosegrass. I mean, that's how I know it, Ryan, is that, you know, that split app of Prodiamine in the spring, mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. just, you know, Ryan, that has just become my best friend. That split app of prodiamine at a moderate rate, that's just mm-hmm. my best friend because it doesn't root prune or stress the turf grass, but it prevents crabgrass and goosegrass. How wonderful.
We did, and this has been years, but I mean, nothing's really changed as far as, you know, climate is concerned. We've had some warmer temps and things like that earlier in the season went up, but, in the back of my golf course days, did a lot of split apps across like 90 some acres of managed turf, right? High cut, low cut, mm-hmm. you name it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looked at different rates and timings and things like that, but really following closely with that growing degree day model and making that first app and being just a tad bit early and then, mm-hmm. You know, giving it no more, really that critical window we found. We tried and stretched out some to 6 weeks and had some breakthrough. 4 was mm-hmm. fine, but 5 weeks seemed to be the critical period where, you know, if we were in that 4 to 5 week range and had our apps well timed on the front end, we were clean as a whistle. So that would be mm-hmm. my, so if you're sweating weather or something like that, like, you know, if you have areas, like for instance, if this gentleman doesn't have irrigation or doesn't want to water in and you're trying to fight the rain or something like that, or time it up. Just be mindful of that you got a little bit of wiggle room there between 28 and 35 days.
I think you should do 7 to 9 pounds.
So, you know, 7 to 9 pounds should be the answer for everything. You know, how many crab legs, you know, should I get when I go to the buffet this Saturday? 7 or 9 pounds. You know what? How much pure Colombian cocaine should I do on my next Vegas trip? 7 to 9 pounds. You know, how if Telly Coleman was to take his penis out on the midway at Busch Gardens and they had tried to guess its weight, what would they guess? 7 or 9 pounds. No question. All right. So, and for doing that, Telly would get a panda bear because that thing's at least 20. It's a hog. All right. Now, let's move on to the next question here. Steve-O, he would like me to read this in monotone. I messed up and didn't get down pre-emergent when I should have. I put down some dimensions 007 March 13th. I'm in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina coastal, so I have a long growing season. I'm seeing more weeds than grass now, and I'm wondering what can I do to get them gone. Last week, we went over my soil test, and I have Bermuda grass, and I'm going to add nitrogen! Exclamation point. Can I do both at the same time? Question mark. I'm a rookie homeowner. Sorry for the fucking book I wrote you. No punctuation. Okay. A lot going on there. So the dimension on March 13th, Ray in coastal South Carolina, we got to be thinking split app here, probably, right?
Yeah, we got to be thinking split app. And here's what I'm going to tell you is, you know, if I'm seeing emerged weeds in a Bermuda lawn at this time of the year, mm-hmm. and I'm guessing that it's a lot of broadleaf kind of stuff, yeah? I'm guessing.
I would imagine.
Just
so.
Speculating,
yeah, especially
and guessing.
Is a new homeowner, so he, you know, who knows what's taking place on this lawn, you know, the preceding mm-hmm. year. So we got to assume the worst here and maybe, uh-huh. you know, coach him through, okay, if you're seeing this, go with this, and maybe if we get a little bit more background, we can do it. But pictures yeah, but, would be great, Steve. Well, actually, let me say this in a different way. Pictures would be great. Okay, go ahead, Ron. Sorry.
Steve, in general, when somebody tells me lawn under new management and you've got weeds everywhere, I have some go-tos that are safe for the Bermuda and legal to apply to residential lawns. And, okay, you have weeds everywhere? Let's see. Favorite tank mixes, Speed Zone plus either MSM or Celsius right now. That would be how I would start. You got sedges coming out, you know, although they usually don't come out this early, but should you have sedges coming out, then add Monument to Speed Zone and go over the entire lawn. But my other advice is, if you apply Dimension one time, I strongly advise that you apply a second application of that Dimension 30 days from when you last applied it. Get
Which
that
is
split
coming up
down, please. Please
yeah,
do,
it's,
please.
It's coming up here. He's basically at 30 please. Days, or about to be. 28 days right now. So
plan
on that. I mean, so ongoing, if he's a new homeowner, let's think about this real quick and just maybe give him, two or three quick tips on what to look for if he is in that coastal climate with Bermuda, which is not unheard of there, but, you know, it's a little bit different. So what are we thinking of in terms of, you know, if he does have any summer breakthrough, what should he look for? Other issues that he might encounter in that coastal area.
I wouldn't imagine anything horrible or extraordinary. And if you applied one app of that Speed Zone and Celsius, or Speed Zone at MSM, here's the thing, Ryan. You know, if you apply that as a broadcast application to the entire lawn, that essentially cuts off your broadleaf weeds for the season. It just shuts it down. I mean, that's just no more. But the key is, and this is the fallacy or the mistake made with products like MSM and Celsius and Monument, people spot spray it and they lose out on the pre-emergent effect that those herbicides have against various broadleaf weeds. You know, when somebody tells me they have a weed forest, my first, temptation is, let's run Speed Zone and MSM over this entire lawn and see what we have left. And do it now while it's still cool. Because should he get into summer breakthrough, then he's going to switch to an amine-based broadleaf herbicide with or without something like Sedgehammer or Certainty or Monument tank mixed in to also catch the emerged sedges. Because I have one more thing that I like to do to weedy lawns starting at this time of the year, Ryan. Sulfentrazone. Yes, on Bermuda. And you know why I like sulfentrazone on Bermuda? Bermuda is tolerant. Bermuda can take it. And so, you know, at this time of the year, I would work on applying 4 ounce per acre sulfentrazone. And in fact, I normally include that 4 ounce of sulfentrazone with my existing crabgrass and goosegrass pre-emergent. So for example, the lawn may be the recipient of a prodiamine or dimension tank mix containing sulfentrazone in the spring, applied twice, 30 days apart. I mean, that's, and that's because sulfentrazone is also a pre-emergent against various broadleaf weeds. I mean, awesome. That's just, you know, I'm just thinking in terms of what have I had to deal with in all of my years dealing with lawns. And you know what, Ryan? I never get these pretty perfect sodded lawns that have zero weeds in them. I never get those kind of jobs.
You know, if it was, if they were all easy, they would all be no fun. So remember that as you're out there doing your route. If you're listening to us on any of your favorite podcast formats, you can do that and think about how easy your life is as a lawn care operator. Okay, let's move on to the next one here. And Jackson Bud would like to know, can you explain gravitropism and when it's induced and the idea behind roots chasing water? Okay. So for those of you at home, so a basic botany lesson here real quick. So there are two independent factors, right, that control most things on Earth, right? So light and gravity, okay? Mm-hmm. So plants are also affected by these in two different ways. So gravitropism is the idea that roots will pull down towards water in theory and push deeper and deeper in the soil to extract what they need and things like that. Whereas what's called phototropism is when plants grow closer to light. So if you see a tree that's maybe like on the edge of a forest and all the branches are on one side, you know, facing mm-hmm. where there's actually light, you'll see more branches on the side. That's a very a good example of phototropism. You'll see it in houseplants a lot, right? If you don't turn that plant very often, and you'll see more of the leaves and the shoots and the stems growing out towards
all the stuff going towards the window, towards the light. Right. Yeah. So
with gravitropism, similar thing. Now, what's interesting is that there's some evidence that, you know, people will say, oh, you know, roots will chase water, everything like that. I think it's partially species dependent. There's not a lot of research literature that I'm aware of in turf grass that expressly states this, right? I think this might be one of those old wives' tales. This would be a good one for Dr. Shaddix to dig into for sure. One of the issues I know that have, and this is sort of the reason that, you know, you'll see them do a lot of botany research in space. And some of this, not all of this, but some of this is related to the idea that, you know, we don't have any area on Earth that is without gravity, right? So it's hard to create an environment that a plant is only purely growing in light, right? You can't mm-hmm. remove the gravity, right, as a constant within that experiment. So some of the work that they've done over the years, now I don't know what that's elicited. I'm not real read up on that. So as far as, you know, might mean from a practical sense, Ray, is, you know, we hear a lot about deep and infrequent watering and the idea that, you know, oh, if you water deeper and infrequently, it's going to make roots grow and everything like that. I don't know that there's anything that necessarily supports that. I wonder if there are other factors at play there, right, that we could see. So I'll have to do some reading on that to be absolutely sure. But okay, what do you think, Ray?
What I think is, the depth of rooting, Ryan, is not influenced by water. Do you know what the depth of rooting is influenced by, actually?
Tell me.
Oxygen. Air.
Fair.
Air. And the reason why I've become very aware of this is I've had the opportunity to compare turf grass growing in a heavy, fine-textured soil versus turf grass growing in sand. Guess which one has a deeper and more robust root system, Ryan?
Oh, I can only imagine, right? One that's got more porosity in the soil, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And so I was sharing with the guys on the Discord pictures of some Tahoma 31. Get this one, Ryan. My instructions to the sod installer were, you install this sod directly on top of the beach sand that was this guy's backyard.
Oh, Lord.
Serious. Oh, yeah. And
okay.
Here's the worst part, or the best part, is now imagine this grass mowed to a half an inch, and it's perfectly green. Tahoma 31 Bermuda.
All right. Well, there's
you know,
there's winners and losers in life, right? All turns.
But then, comparatively, what I see also is, you know, when I have to go dig a hole, say, to repair irrigation, that's where I get to see the difference in rooting in soil versus sand. And oftentimes I notice that, you know, when I'm in these areas where it's just heavy, finely textured soil, my root depth literally stops at approximately 1 to 2 inches. That's where the roots really end. Yeah, seriously, Ryan. It ends at 1 to 2 inches, whereas if I'm working on sand, my rooting depth goes way past 2 inches. I'm getting 6 inches, 8 inches. You know, it's quite the difference. It's quite the difference. Mm. And so that is why. And you know what the funny thing is that, you know, when I'm working on turf grass that is growing on this heavy soil, the worst thing I can do to that turf grass is to water it deeply and infrequently. That's the worst thing I can do to that turf. And the reason is because, remember now, my rooting depth is limited. My rooting depth is highly limited. And the other issue is that if I create a condition where that finely textured soil becomes hydrophobic because I made it dry down too far, I just created a problem for myself, didn't I?
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Dry is not good.
Yeah, that's definitely not good. So, okay. Let's see here.
Yeah, what's next?
Okay, what's our next question here? Jay Farm, Jordan Farmer, wants to know, what would you recommend for first year after a reno, turf type 12 fescue? Usually under 3 pounds per M annually. So for those of you that don't know, Jay Farm is in the Kansas City area. You know, and I believe he's only manual irrigation. So he's got to pull a hose out there to get it irrigated. You know, first year, if you had a good growing and you're not doing any seeding, anything like that, I'm still a strong proponent of not using a pre-emergent and just trying to be early and ready to go with a post-emergent control strategy for your summer annual weeds. I think that's the right move. While you may have some open voids and bare spots and things like that, you know, root pruning on immature roots too soon,
it's
right?
Kind of harsh.
Even if you're doing a split up, I haven't seen good success with that in terms of, you know, just playing it quote unquote safe and going out with a post emergent and trying to get it, you know, timed up. So watching leaf emergence, if you do have any bare areas where you've got triggered indicator spots, you know, watching to when you get to that 2 leaf stage and then 2 tiller stage on crabgrass, trying to spray within that window so you can control easily the single herbicide, you know, like quinclorac or something like that, as opposed to having to mix up a tank mix of multiple herbicides. So that's one thing. I think actually, on the end, go ahead.
Actually, Ryan, you know what my usual, you know, play is on recently seeded lawns as the pre-emergent?
Tenacity?
I like to see, wait, I'm not done yet. I like to see Tenacity plus Quinclorac applied as a broadcast spray to that area that you know, are concerned about, you know, crabgrass and broadleaf weed emergence. And do you know why I'm a fan of that combination?
Tell me.
It is because, okay, I know Quinclorac as this agricultural herbicide called Facet.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know Mesotrione as this agricultural herbicide called Callisto. And both of those herbicides are employed as pre-emergence in field crops. Okay? That's what their actual usage is that Quinclorac and Mesotrione are pre-emergence in field crops. Again,
that's absurd.
I'm going to say that...
That's absurd. I saw Dr. Shaddix in there. And he said absurd, so I had to come back with that.
That the reason why most people don't see the pre-emergent effect is that they're utilizing both Quinclorac and Mesotrione as spot sprays to individual weeds, but then watch what happens when you decide to lay down the label rate of those herbicides to an entire lawn area. You just put down a pre-emergent at that point. You just apply to pre-emergent, and you know what the good part is? Is that that pre-emergent happens to be non-root pruning, therefore it is safe for recently seeded grasses. So like if you seeded last fall and you're concerned about root pruning, then, yep, do some Quinclorac and Tenacity. Send it. Go ahead. And that will be a lot better than watching your recently seeded lawn turn into a weed forest. You know, that's for sure.
Goodness. All right. Let's see what is...
Sorry, I don't know. I don't know where we are.
We're all over everywhere.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right. Lawn flip. He says... I've heard that after tree removal, roots can continue to live for years, affecting grass growth, especially noticeable during early spring. The grass cool season appears to be stunted and yellow. What's actually happening? I'm experiencing a similar effect in the area where the tree was removed back in 2007. Is it likely that a tree removed that long ago could still be causing this issue?
Yes. Have you... And we've talked about this a lot before, lawn flip. This is one of my favorite things to do. If you've ever been at a compost yard where they're actually rowing compost rows, and you go put your hand in it, what is one of the things you notice? It's hot. You can be out there in the middle of February on an 8-degree day and put your hand in it, and it's hot. You'll see the steam coming off of it. Have you ever heard of a spontaneous combustion fire at a mulch plant or mulch facility?
Yep.
I've seen poultry manure actually spontaneously catch on fire, and you come in the morning and it's just a pile of nails where it was sitting on the pallet. When material, so in the art of composting, there's a C to N ratio, right? And when you hit this magic C to N ratio, shit gets hot because it's going through a lot of biological processes. And unfortunately, that can happen subsurface. And it may happen at the surface. It may happen 3 inches below the surface. And so you may have a beautiful grass stand, a beautiful stand of grass on top of it. But then it's 130 degrees, and then the roots touch it, and it starts to fry. Or your C to N ratio is so far out of whack that you effectively have zero nitrogen, and you start to have a yellow discoloration of grass. So just because it happened in 2007, it was removed in 2007, does that mean it can still happen? Holy hell, yeah. Think about how much biomass is in a single tree. Think about how much biomass is in a single root system of a tree. Especially if it's a root system like a effing crepe myrtle that continues to just regrow from nothing. It's like it's constantly regenerating.
Okay, Matt, this is where I take issue with standard tree removal procedures. And you know why I take issue is because
the grass never
just
grows,
because
right?
The tree is cut. No, the tree, just because the tree is cut down, don't mean that the gall dang thing is dead. It ain't dead right. yet.
That too.
And you know when I say it ain't dead yet? Here's what I've seen happen with various trees. I've seen various trees continue to live. Their root system is still alive for a long time after the tree has been cut down. And the only way to ensure that the tree dies is after that tree is cut down, you've basically got to put something on that stump right after it's been cut to make sure that the rest of that root system dies. And if you don't do that, you're going to have a tree that will hang on and continue to live maybe for decades. And the reason why I say for decades is I've known instances of various tropical trees that were cut down and their roots are still alive decades later.
The I can't tell you the number of people that have wrote in over the years and they're like, I chained a crepe myrtle to the back of a Dodge 3500 with an Allison transmission and I ripped everything out. And the next spring,
so they think
it grew back. How is that humanly possible? If you've ever cut a tree, right? And you watch it over the period of time that it dies. So you didn't do any stump removal or anything. You just watch it as it goes through. You're going to see suckers come out. You will watch it weep water for a long period of time. A long time. And if it's weeping water, what does that mean? It means it's still trying to hang on. It's not like a chicken where you cut its head off and it keeps running around or whatever, right? You know, because a piece of the brain stem is hanging on the roots, right? Or that's probably a really terrible analogy. I mean, we don't have brains in trees, right? But it's still trying to hang on. And there's a lot of you know, stress responses that take place, and it's a method of survival at that point. And it's not as easy as just cutting it down. So yeah, you're going to see weird things. Hopefully that answers at least what happens. Dr. Shaddix asked, serious question.
Mm-hmm.
That's absurd. This is actually not an absurd question. Is there any chemical that remove Poetriv from turf type tall fescue without killing the turf type tall fescue? DeMay threw one in here, and there, you know, so it used to be you would see on the label of sulfosulfuron, which is certainty.
Certainty.
Yeah, don't use chlorosulfuron. Sorry, I'm still on that kick.
Yeah. If you want to get the course out there, your tall fescue is not going to like that too much.
Toast.
Yeah.
None of the shrubs in the property are going to like it either. They're all going to die. Everything's going to die.
None of the trees will
die.
Like it. The trees won't like it. Everything's gone.
Uh-huh.
Get you that little that little rubber cement sized jar out, and that was the good old days.
The good old days. I'm getting snorted out of that.
They're too young. Just don't know. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh dear. Actually,
but when they removed sulfosulfuron, the piece of the label that mentioned, you can go ahead and throw that up, J-Pink, the part that mentioned, you know, applicability for Poetrivialis, if I recall, it might be just for Kentucky bluegrass, but if I recall, they did remove that just due to unintended consequences of using it. So kind of the last one that was hanging around was Velocity, also known as Bisporax sodium. And then all of a sudden, they got rid of Bisporax sodium. And that is a valent product, which is part of the New Farm family or whatever. And well, guess what, boys? It's back. Bisporax sodium is back. And I'll say my experience with it is that the timing of it makes it incredibly difficult to use. I never ran into collateral kill issues with it. However, the timing of it always made it difficult. So DeMay is going to cite some literature here for us so we can use the body of evidence we have in front of us to make the best decisions we can. Thinking critically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's absurd.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
go ahead,
Ray. I'm absurd. Let's be honest.
The thing about using Bespirec is that Bespirec has the same mode of action as sulfonylurea herbicides.
Whoa, whoa.
And, yep, SU herbicides. And so, you know when you said chlorsulfuron? I thought, well, Bespirec has the same mode of action as chlorsulfuron or metsulfuron. It's just that by some fluke, turf-type tall fescue, bent grass, and ryegrass are marginally tolerant of Bespirec. And you know when I say marginally tolerant? Here's how tolerant those grasses are. If you apply this treatment program with the velocity in cool weather under conditions of adequate moisture, you're okay. You can proceed with the treatment program. However, the second that it turns either warm or you have a lack of water, as in a turf-type tall fescue area that is not on irrigation, guess what happens to the grass?
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
What do we have here today? What do we see here?
Let's go down to there's a lot to unpack here. We'll kind of hit the highlights. This is a good paper for Dr. Shattuck to go over, though, on his channel, because I think it highlights a few things that are important about using this herbicide, even in its reformulated state. So this is work from 05-06. I think they had at least four different sites. Five different sites. I don't know, four sites and five reps. So they had a sun and a shade in South Dakota. And you'll notice there, right there at the bottom of that table, the daily high and low temperatures, and these are listed in Celsius, right? So you'll see, you know, some differences there where they're looking at May applications, and if you move further down, they do June applications too. And these are sequential applications that are repeated either every 2 or every 4 weeks, depending on the herbicide here, because they're looking at both certainty, which is sulfosulfuron, and they're looking at Bespirec sodium, which is the old formulation of velocity. What I don't know is how that new formulation is going to translate over to. It's the same AI, right?
The same AI. The only difference is that rather than making you bring out the Coke scale.
I got a lot of those laying around, you know, still, for some reason. It's weird.
You gotta measure the new formulation of Bespirec through Matt. I know you know through an insulin syringe.
Yeah.
Hey yo.
That's the velocity PM formulation because it's now a liquid. However, don't get all happy because after people mentioned it on the Discord, I had to go look at the Velocity PM label, and Matt, Ryan, 0.38 ounces per acre. That's your starting dosage on Velocity PM. 0.38 ounces per acre. I'm like, dear.
The good news there, and this is, you know, this is all jokes aside, but, you know, not really for right now, but, you know, with the old formulation, you had to wait about 6 months to grow that Coke nail on your pinky to be able to scoop out, you know, the requisite amount. Now that's like maybe a month, you know, we're talking about just, you know, keeping yourself under wraps for about 4 weeks. Okay. So
this is 0.25 mils per thousand, by the way, a quarter of a mil per thousand. For rate.
Jeez, Jiminy Crickets.
Which, again, back to the margin of error statement, right? Like, you've got to be careful. So I think the idea here, Dr. Shaddix, I mean, the sulfonylureas, they've played around a lot of this. And if you want to look into this, Dr. Shaddix, I'd highly recommend that don't look just in turf grass, but look in seed production, right? Mm. Because a lot of those sulfonylureas are used to clean up fields, right? That's what has been tried and true in a lot of cool season fields out in Oregon, Washington State. So take a look at that. But go back to that paper there real quick, Jay Pink. I want to walk through this real quick. Go down here, table four. Yeah, here we go. So again, looking at percent cover of rustop bluegrass, which is poetry for those of you scoring at home. And they're looking at the sulfosilurane treatments and the bisperoxide sodium treatments. If we want you to target in there on the bottom, on the bisperoxide sodium, and look at that reduction, right, from 4 weeks after initial treatment to 8 weeks after initial treatment on all those rates. Now, what's interesting is, you know, we go here on the low rate and we see a bounce back, right? So we don't have time to peel into temperatures and things like that, but this is heavily, heavily, heavily influenced by temperature, right? So temperature 75 degrees and above at time and after application are absolutely critical for this to work. And as Ray alluded to, irrigation also very critical too, because you need your desirable grass healthy and growing to push through this. So it is not for the faint of heart.
Also a caveat. Go ahead. Also needs there to be a caveat in that 75 to 80 degrees is actually optimal conditions for tolerance of the desirable turf grass. When you start going up into 85 and beyond, as far as your daytime temperatures, turf grass tolerance plummets. And that's what I was getting at, where you make this application program and then it turns warm, you may not be ready for what you see. Because, Ryan, I remember when this was Velocity SG, and I always wondered, why don't the golf guys like to use it? I wondered why. And then I found out about how touchy it was to use this and not smoke your tees and fairways.
Like, I never saw anybody absolutely smoking. So a lot of what I'm going to say now is anecdotal from playing around with the old formulation from a period of whatever, 07 to 09, something like that. And the problem that we always had was that was just that, right? That we would fluctuate just enough on temperature that, you know, we would never see the control that we wanted. Now, we would make reductions. And I think that if you're going to do this, and I would caution Dr. Shaddix or any practitioner that this is not a, hey, we're going to run through the protocol 1 year and lights out, like we're good. This is going to be part of an overall management strategy. Just like, you know, if you go look at PoaCure, and if you look at all the trial data from that's been put out through the land grants and the way that they've kind of approached a lot of different protocols over the years versus spring applications, fall applications, all that kind of stuff. I think what you'll find is that it becomes a tool, not a silver bullet. So in tall fescue, if you're unirrigated, I'd be very, very careful. And I would either push the envelope and go later and, you know, hope for the best, maybe supplementally irrigate to something like that, or go earlier and, you know, risk reward of spending all that money, which this is not a very inexpensive product.
You
folks saw the prices on this stuff?
I haven't seen the new prices, but I know before I got it on absolute closeout because they weren't making it anymore. And they were just trying to get rid of it. And I think I paid like $330, but I believe it was going for like maybe triple that. I can't remember. But I remember like thinking to myself, I got the best deal. I can't wait to go try it.
Well, Matt, because the current price is that I hear that this comes in a little 16-ounce bottle, right? And agency price on this shit is like $500 for 16 ounces.
But if it goes out at 0.38, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it goes out at 0.38, yeah. yeah, your cost per thousand is not extreme, but then at the same time, you also look at if you're trying to push max rates, that goes up to 2 ounces per acre.
JP, can you throw up the paper one more time? I'm sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot like that. One of the things I want to point out here is that I hear people ask about sulfosulfuron for POA control, period. It is a garbage product. Okay, look, even at a high rate, 3 sequential applications, you get a knockdown of 93% to 14% coverage. 12 weeks after initial treatment, we're back to 57% coverage. Stop using Certainty thinking that you're going to control POA with it. Just quit. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
No.
It's not effective. It's not sufficient. Stop doing it. Stop it. Get help.
Yeah.
There is.
Telly Coleman said, would you add a kicker to Speed Zone and Metsulfuron Methyl? Speed Zone has a kicker, so I don't know why I would add a kicker to it. The kicker being Carfentrazone, which is actually a great kicker to go alongside of Metsulfuron Methyl. So,
but Telly, what are you trying to do? One. Because I do have one for springtime applications. And this
combining
is only
those two,
done
what would you add?
On Bermuda. Only on Bermuda now, guys.
He's going to say like simazine.
No simazine. Sulfentrazone. 4 ounce per acre sulfentrazone.
Golly.
Carfen plus sulfen plus metsulfuron.
Give me all the PPOIs.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we're on the craps table. I feel like we're on the craps table. We just bet all the hard ways.
You see, Ryan, when I do a weed control app, I want to make sure people know I was there.
Yeah. There's no callbacks. I don't see my weeds dying. Ray comes and they're like, holy shit, don't ever do that again.
We need to get Ray the lawn posting signs, you know, with like the little thing, but it's got to like be the outline from when you look out your window of like The Undertaker or something like that, you know.
You still have to have nutscaping in the picture. I mean,
oh yeah.
Look, if you're looking out a window, there's got to be a nutsack in there.
J Pink cut mine off tonight.
J Pink, give his nuts back, damn it!
Slide that up. Let's do it. Where are we going back? All right.
There.
Velocity PM is the hottest thing. It's the hottest thing on the YouTubes right now. Nobody can verify if those are actually that's a scrotum or not. It's not mine, I promise. All right, so let's see.
Here. Brought your nutsack back. Princess said, Green Dot, can you talk more about using Speed Zone as a surfactant?
I can. Here's what the deal is that not only is it an ester, but then I have good word from the people at PBI Gordon that they literally formulated that Speed Zone Red with high quality solvents and surfactants.
I can believe
and
it.
The quality
I believe most of the PBI and the, most of the PBI products, no, actually, I think if not all, are all like that now. Like you don't run a surfactant.
Actually, the old, I'm talking about the old Speed Zone Red that was oil-based, and Princess, make sure that, hang on, guys, because
smell like gasoline.
Okay, make sure, yeah, it smells like gas or paint thinner, but then the thing is that some of the PBI, some of the new PBI Gordon products, like, I remember getting a bottle of the brand new Speed Zone Southern EW, and I was a little bit disappointed. And the reason why I was disappointed is because they took away the solvents and the surfactants. Instead, what PBI Gordon did with that Speed Zone EW is that they emulsified the 2,4-D and carfentrazone in water. So in other words, it looked like milk in the bottle. It was
versus
not a clear oil.
Speed Zone Red, when you added it to water, looked like milk. But not until you added it to water.
Yeah, not until you added it to water. So then if you have that classic speed zone that looks like oil, and then when you pour it into your sprayer, it breaks up into an emulsion, that's the good one. That one you can use as a surfactant, because I got to tell you that when I use the new Speed Zone Southern EW mat, I have to add my own methylated seed oil to get it to work.
I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but a good barometer whether or not an herbicide was going to work was that if I was nervous to light a cigarette around it, that was when I knew. Oh,
remember the old 41.3% propiconazole?
Yes. Oh, buddy. Oh man, you didn't want to light a cigarette like in the back of the yard.
Hear the leaves crying as you went by it with the sprayer.
Help me! No, I'm going to take you folks even further back, because, you know, remember now, I'm from the 1990s. Don't light a cigarette near, here's one, Durspan 2E, Diazinon 4E, or Melathion 5E. Don't. For your sake, please don't. Just saying, man.
little gashes there. Be careful. Are you guys doing two split apps of prodiamine for the year? I think he's asking, do you do split apps in the spring and then split apps in the fall?
No, Brian. No.
Two in the spring, and then if I still have room on the label, then one in the fall.
Or Brian, here's how I would handle it in your area. Springtime prodiamine, but fall spectacle, and or if you're itchy or nervous about putting spectacle down, simazine in the fall. Okay, that is how I would do it, because you see, my weeds of concern through spring and summer in that part of the United States are crabgrass and goosegrass. That's my high anxiety weeds, you know, in that part of the world for spring and summer. Whereas towards the winter, then I'm thinking about stuff like poa and broadleaf weeds. I mean, that, you know, if that's fair enough. I mean, so here's the other thing. You know, you said spectacle mat.
Mm-hmm.
I would be ultra careful about spectacle on St. Augustine. I'd be very careful about spectacle. And the reason why I'd be careful about spectacle on St. Augustine is because St. Augustine, unlike Zoysia and Bermuda, is not rhizomatous. St. Augustine is only stoloniferous. Stoloniferous only. It's a service runner. So if I were going to do spectacle on St. Augustine, and it's like, that's if I'm feeling particularly brave, I would run the lowest labeled rate of spectacle as a split. I'm talking about 2 to 3 ounces of spectacle per acre per application.
And that Please is, and Brian, that's common in Florida. Like, that's what I hear a lot of guys doing down in Florida is low rate split apps of spectacle in the fall. But definitely not prodiamine followed by prodiamine. Don't do that.
Yeah. And if you do have a lot of broadleaf pressure, then consider either simazine MSM added to that spectacle. Don't up your spectacle rate. Don't do it. Because should I tell you folks about what I saw when somebody tried to apply 9 ounces of spectacle to maintain turf grass at a time? Ryan's cringing.
I mean, the good news is there were no weeds. I mean, we got that.
There were no weeds, but then I get the panicked phone call that, hey, my fairway is turning yellow and it looks like it's going to die.
Yes.
What do we do? What do we do?
Activated carbon.
Okay. Yeah, I said, let's see. Activated charcoal, number one. And two, you're going to have to support this grass until its roots come back. So you're going to be doing foliar NPK plus micronutrients because you just pruned off all the roots. Don't do that.
My goodness.
Yeah.
What do we got?
I think that's it.
That's it. All right. Listen, we're going to go to the after show now.
Let me answer this for Nick real quick. Selective herbicide for broom sedge in Bermuda. Mow it low. I would play around with Celsius and Revolver.
I got one more for that. I got one more for that, right, Matt? I would do wick application of glyphosate. Let the broom sedge grow up, and then pass a wiper.
What Pilex would do on it too? Just curious.
Nothing. Pilex wouldn't do any. Yeah.
Damn it.
And the other thing that doesn't phase broom sedge is my favorite Tenacity plus Syncor. That doesn't phase it either. It turns it a little white and then it grows back. That's why I go crazy on it and I just break out the 30% glyphosate on the brush.
Which is a surefire way to kill it. Playing with Celsium Revolver is a very expensive trial by fire. So I would probably just glide. All right, we're getting out of here. We're going to go to the after show. We're going to go hang out with our patrons, patreon.com/burnerreturn. Come hang out. Word of warning before we dip out. If you think you're going to go over there and it's going to be, you know, friendly Sunshine banter back and forth and slapping each other on the back, if that ain't it, brother, I'll tell you right now, come with thick skin, a smile on your face. You might need an adult beverage. At this point, I don't need to drink while I do it, you know, because I don't know. I'm old, I guess.
Full force.
That's absurd.
But
the one thing I will say, if you do opt to join the Patreon, hop on over to our Discord, and one of the most appreciative things about it is that it's a collection of people that are interested in being better and doing better, and that is the one thing that I can guarantee we'll get out of it. You're probably not going to get the cleanest of language, you're probably not going to get the cleanest of jokes, but you will have a collection of people that have one genuine interest and that is bettering themselves. So check it out, patreon.com/burnandreturn. Otherwise, DeMay, you give me the finger. You okay?
Oh, no. Oh, happy birthday, TK.
Happy birthday! I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
There it is. Happy birthday to TK. Yeah, got a birthday just after my daughter, too. Is she 8 years old as well? My goodness.
I hope is that she rides Telly's permagreen real hard tonight.
On that, we're heading out of here. Bye.